This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you Tuesday, December 2nd, 2003. Ominous warnings of military rule in America. Far-fetched? That's not the opinion of members of the press. Today on Taking Aim, testing the waters, military rule in America. Just in the past week, three incredible articles appeared. A 20-page spread in the lifestyle magazine Cigar Aficionado, featuring a smiling Tommy Franks, General Tommy Franks, four-star general, recently retired, who had been the commander of CENTCOM, in charge of the invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq. General Tommy Franks, what he said was released by Newsmax on November 21st. Then, in the Los Angeles Times, noted defense analyst William Arkin had an article on Sunday, November 23rd, about mission creep. And in the Washington Post on the same day, David Rothkopf had an article warning of what it would take to keep President Bush in office. Testing the waters, military rule in America. Ominous warnings, here it comes. Let's look at what General Tommy Franks said specifically. He talked about weapons of mass destruction proliferating throughout the world and terrifying the population. He said, quote, "We see it in the Middle East today. In order to change the mannerisms, the behavior, the sociology, and ultimately the anthropology of a society. The first step would be a nexus between weapons of mass destruction of any variety. It could be chemical, it could be biological, it could be some nuclear device, and terrorism. But then it goes to step number two. Step number two, he says, in which the Western world, the free world, loses what it cherishes most, and that is freedom and liberty we've seen for a couple hundred years in this grand experiment that we call democracy. In a practical sense, he asks, what does it mean? It means that in the United States of America, should there be a massive casualty-producing event in the Western world, but particularly in the United States of America, now listen carefully, that causes our population to question our own constitution and to begin to militarize our country in order to avoid a repeat of another mass casualty-producing event, which in fact then begins to potentially unravel the fabric of our constitution." Ralph?
This is not just a speculation. The featuring of the Tommy Franks piece was characterized by John O. Edwards in Newsmax as follows on the 21st of November. "General Franks doubts the Constitution will survive. Tommy Franks said the United States will be hit with a weapon of mass destruction which will inflict large casualties and the Constitution will be discarded in favor of a military form of government." The December edition of Cigar Aficionado was the launching point for a scenario in which Franks stated that the use of biological, chemical, and nuclear weapons inflicting heavy casualties is not just a hypothetical danger, but a probability. And in these circumstances, Frank states, the Constitution will be removed. Of course, it will be because of popular demand that the military will seize control. That is the fictive scenario to justify what is already being sounded, for which the American people are being prepared. It is entering into the mainstream of discourse. The logic of the fictive threat of terror, the military control of American society.
War as a permanent state That is what General Tommy Franks concludes this 20-page interview in Cigar Aficionado. Quote, "It's not in the history of civilization for peace to ever reign. Never has in the history of man. Ever." Now, what this means for General Tommy Franks is the integration of the military in all aspects of life. As he says, there'll be the haves and the have-nots. It's the nature of history. And it seems to me that when he looks at history, when civilizations grow powerful, in some cases they grow lazy, and those less fortunate rise up and take it away from them. And so we've had for thousands of years wars on this planet. Now, for Tommy Franks, it is the inevitable class struggle. And for Tommy Franks, the solution? Massive military. The adventures and massive militarization here at home.
But this is a rationale for the ruling class in desperate straits faced by an increasingly pauperized, immiserated mass of humankind to preserve their control and their decaying system by the resort to effectively fascist modes of rule. And the rationale is, as you cite, Maya, the following. If you look at Greek civilization and the Romans and all the others, history has shown that when civilizations grow powerful, the less fortunate rise up and take it away from them, and that we've had for thousands of years, and that we are going to continue to have. There will be permanent wars on this planet. Terrorism is a form of warfare. Incredibly small numbers of combatants create huge problems, and as long as they get the military job done, nations are going to have to turn to terrorism, and it is not a delightful prospect. He states, the way we protect our civilization is through strength, not through hope. Here is an entire rationale for the inevitability and the necessity for military control. Amplified in great detail now, not only in the Tommy Franks piece, because it is not alone. USA Today, Al-Qaeda plans something big on November 27th. A top counterterrorism official states that Al-Qaeda operatives are focusing on a spectacular assault comparable to the September 11th attacks. And indeed, it says Al-Qaeda will strike here with a catastrophic attack, according to a top intelligence official who asked not to be identified. Recent intelligence reports, they state, indicate that Al-Qaeda is fascinated by the idea of using aircraft as missiles and, indeed, chemical and biological weapons on a scale not experienced before.
Ralph, what's interesting to me about the November 27th article in USA Today is that this top counterterrorism official, unnamed, who had been speaking to Kevin Johnson of USA Today, he says there's nothing specific, and even it goes on to say that he has no evidence. And yet here is USA Today collaborating with a top counterterrorism official, whom we must assume is the CIA, in setting the stage for having everyone believe that there's going to be, on the part of Al-Qaeda and the Osama bin Laden network, a mass terror strike against the people of the United States.
Well, Maya, they make this clear. The anticipation is this year, and they speak of inevitability. But here, buried in this article in USA Today, is an extremely revealing commentary. It states, it is unclear who is directing this Al-Qaeda strategy. Bin Laden is hiding along the Pakistan-Afghanistan border. It is difficult for him to plot strategy as he is being hunted. Now, you're describing a person who is literally on the move each day, in disguise, on donkey back, in caravans, without any means of communication, who cannot use a telephone, who cannot use a radio communication device, who is monitored by satellite, and yet this hunted figure this presumed demonic other, is capable of launching an attack on such a scale, coordinated in all ways, not only in the United States, but in countries abroad. Never has there been so preposterous a fiction, so clear a pretext, so obvious a terrorizing of the American people with a fictive menace that is the actual plan of the military state itself. We are in the presence of the advanced plans for nothing less than the cancellation of the elections in 2004.
Ralph, before we get to that, which is the real sucko that is discussed in the Washington Post, let's look at some of the supposed evidence. Now, the USA Today cites the counterterrorism official as saying that the government is conducting 1,000 investigations in the United States. We know, and it's been stated by the FBI and others, that it's actually more than 1,000 investigations. But what is interesting is that they are holding suspects that they classify as, quote, unwitting facilitators. That is, people who they think might be used for obtaining documents and other materials. So it's not just who they consider terrorist suspects, but also unwitting facilitators. But USA Today has to conclude that it's, quote, unclear whether the group, meaning Al-Qaeda, has access to chemical or biological weapons. So here we have again setting the stage, and this article in USA Today with the interview with the unnamed top counterterrorism official was spread throughout the world. The Scotsman had Al-Qaeda planning attack to rival 9/11, spreading the story that of this counterterrorism official speaking to USA Today. And then it concludes with, in the Scotsman, that would mean that any potential terrorists would have to enter the country from abroad, meaning coming into the United States to launch a catastrophic attack. And as well as the Scotsman, you have the Times of India on November 29th. Al-Qaeda planning massive strike, U.S. official. Again, citing the USA Today report that a top counterterrorism official has said that Al-Qaeda operatives dropped plans this year for several small attacks in the U.S. to focus on plotting a more spectacular assault comparable to September 11th. Now, when it comes to intent, and you were talking about that before, General Tommy Franks, to return to the Cigar Aficionado interview, states specifically that intent is all that is needed in order to launch massive assaults against countries throughout the world. He says, quote, all they have to have is the intent to do us harm. The intent to do us harm. He said it didn't matter, basically, that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. All that was had to be clear is that they had some precursor chemicals or that they may have had some intent. Ralph?
The article in the Washington Post by David Rothkopf spells it out. Terrorist logic, and this is November 23rd, disrupt the 2004 elections. A string of suicide bombings beginning on the day of the first presidential debate will transform the country on the streets and in the campaign. All issues that dominated the candidate's stump speeches will disappear, and the only one that will matter is terrorism. The nation living at threat level red for a month. The loudest voice in the campaign trail will be that of a terrorist leader hiding in a cave on the other side of the world. And now the article states the following. I co-chaired a meeting of more than 200 senior business and government executives, many of them specialists in security and terrorism issues. Three-quarters of them stated that the United States would see a major terrorist strike before the end of 2004. The same number, three-quarters, predicted that the assault will be far greater than that of 9/11 and will involve weapons of mass destruction. These are serious people, not prone to hysteria or panic, he writes. top military officers, leading policymakers, and the scientists and researchers and others who support them, who have studied these issues for a long time. They know that in country after country, elections are an irresistible lure for terrorists, and that elections are disrupted by strikes designed to commandeer the spotlight to derail democracy. And so the article, as in the Washington and the Los Angeles Times, as in the USA Today, prepares the public for the cancellation of the elections in 2004 because of the ominous terrorists who are going to unleash an onslaught that dwarfs the events of 9/11. This is an orchestrated theme. This is the illustrated pretext. This is the preparation for the seizure of power. This is the context for what Tommy Franks calls the scrapping of the Constitution, the removal of any formal pretext or pretense of democratic rights and democratic governance and representative government in the United States.
Ralph, David Rothkopf, who was leading this meeting of 200 senior business and government executives, which was hosted by CNBC, the cable network of NBC, he had been the Deputy Undersecretary of Commerce and International Trade Policy in the Clinton administration, and now he's a visiting scholar at the Carnegie Endowment for Peace. And it's interesting to look at the examples he gives of situations where so-called terrorist assaults benefited, or what was called terrorist assaults, benefited the what he considers the right wing. In Israel in 1996, for instance, he cites that Labor Party leader Shimon Peres had a 25 to 30 point lead over his Likud rival Benjamin Netanyahu. Then there were suicide bombings, which claimed more than 60 lives in 4 weeks. He writes, Peres was widely seen as the more conciliatory candidate, and Netanyahu won. Again, in 2002, there was a bombing in Jerusalem, and Ariel Sharon was elected. And in Russia, Vladimir Putin, who took a strong stance against the Chechens, is widely credited with his presidential win in 2000. And he goes on with countries throughout the world, be they Turkey or Sri Lanka. His point, and also Colombia, his point is that a tough stance against terrorism, police crackdowns, military adventures are what will ensure a presidential victory for George Bush.
And what he leaves out is the series of documented examples of how the bombings in Moscow were staged by the KGB of Putin and attributed to the Chechens to provide both the rationale for the massive crackdown on any kind of dissent in Russia and for the securing of the control of the Putin government.
Or, as we have documented over and again, the role of the Mossad, the Shin Bet, and the other Israeli security forces in staging the so-called suicide bombings and other attacks within the Zionist state.
And indeed, in amplification of the methods that were used to secure Netanyahu and Sharon Haaretz on the 1st of December. Ibrahim, the Shin Bet wants you to join Al-Qaeda, by Danny Rose Rubenstein. Unveiling Israeli intelligence schemes throughout Gaza to recruit Palestinians to Al-Qaeda. The Al-Qaeda, in fact, the Shin Bet, the FBI of the Zionist state. No pretense here. Al-Qaeda in Gaza is the Shin Bet. The recruitment, that of the Israeli intelligence services. The putative terror attacks, the contrivance of the military intelligence Zionist state. The model, 9/11 itself.
Ralph, I received an email that had very interesting news about Germany and Spain, also about preparing their populations for massive military intervention and a permanent war against terrorism. It was entitled, "Is the Next Wave of Terrorism Prepared for Europe?" And it refers to articles that appeared in Süddeutsche Zeitung, Die Welt, and other internet searches. And in a psychological warfare operation, it reads, strange ads with the slogan, "No power to terrorism," have continued to appear in the major European daily papers, particularly in Germany, Süddeutsche Zeitung and Die Welt. The responsible organization calls itself European Security Advocacy Group, ESAG. ESAG has existed now for 2 years and has been raising money for this media campaign. The ads are put out by major advertising agencies, Vail International and ICOM, International Communications Agency Network, based in Colorado. Now, with these ads, they've been placed in Spain, they've been placed in Germany, they've been placed in France. And they specifically target Muslims, and to pit people, particularly in Germany, against the large Islamic population moving there, the immigrants to Germany. Now, what was said by Norman Vail of the PR firm Vail International in referring to the ad that had been placed in the Spanish paper ABC on October 11th and 12th, he said that after 9/11, it was important to, quote, help show the effects of terror. Since terrorism knows no borders, quote, it is a permanent threat for all societies and a threat for coming generations. Permanent war, that is what is becoming a massive media campaign throughout Europe.
Well, Maya, every single major bourgeois organ in all the industrial and dependent countries are orchestrating this theme. The Times of India, Britain's security services prepare for bombings. London Sunday Times, security services expect Christmas bombings by Al-Qaeda on a scale not experienced before. Early editions of the National Weekly stated that the police, MI5 security services are preparing for simultaneous attacks across Great Britain. This theme has been orchestrated in New Zealand. It has been orchestrated in India, in Great Britain, in Germany. It is a coordinated propaganda campaign. That is the context of the trial balloon of Tommy Franks, who is no marginal figure, who states not only that war is permanent, that it is a historical necessity, that the haves always wanted protect what they have from the have-nots, and that permanent military control is an essential component of that task. It is amplified by the important William Arkin article in the Los Angeles Times on November 23rd, Mission Creep Hits Home. The American Armed Forces are assuming the major domestic policing and surveillance roles, is the subheading. And indeed, William Arkins is a military affairs analyst with close ties to the Pentagon. And he writes, preoccupied with the war in Iraq, traumatized by September 11th, the American public has paid little attention to what is being done inside the United States in the name of anti-terrorism. Under the banner of Homeland Security, the military and intelligence communities are implementing far-reaching changes that have blurred the lines between, quote, terrorism, unquote, and all other forms of crises, and break down the long-established barriers to military control and surveillance within the United States. Quote, we must think differently, says Air Force General Ralph E. Ed Eberhardt, the newly installed commander of Northern Command, the military's homeland security arm. The military and intelligence systems were focused on the away game before 9/11. They were not focused, as we must, on the home game. And what does that mean in practical terms? The Northern Command will exercise control over civilian authority and over all aspects of civil life in the United States.
Arkin specifically elaborates on several steps that have been taken recently. One, a decision by Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld to expand the mission of the Counterintelligence Field Activity, CFA, which was established last year to protect, quote, critical infrastructure. What Rumsfeld has done is he has authorized CFA to have a domestic law enforcement database that includes information related to so-called potential terrorist threats and directed against the Department of Defense. Now, under this CFA, this Counterintelligence Field Activity, it has meaned creating an enormous database that combines the databases of the FBI and other intelligence organizations throughout the country. And we'll discuss more about that in a while. Two, the assigning of military special agents to, there are now 84, Arkin says 56, but FBI Director Mueller states that there are now 84 FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force operations at FBI field offices throughout the United States. That's the JTTF, the Joint Terrorism Task Force operations that conducts spying operations throughout the United States. Now, supposedly, they're investigating potential threats to the military and local communities inside the United States, but it is a vague definition of what a threat to the military might be. Three, the decision by Eberhardt, the commander of NORTHCOM, to transform the Joint Task Force 6, which was a drug enforcement unit of 160 soldiers at Fort Bliss, Texas, into a counterterrorism force. Counterterrorism force such as the CIA has or the special ops of the Army. And it's called the Interagency Task Force North. Now, Congress had authorized Task Force 6 in 1996, and it was considered the first exception to the Posse Comitatus law, which creates a dividing line between the military and the law enforcement policing operations of state and local governments. But now, with the Joint Task Force 6, which transformed the drug enforcement wing, we now have a counterterrorism force right within NORTHCOM. The last is the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. Sounds like a big name. But what it does is it creates an urban data inventory combining unclassified and classified data in 133 cities as well as U.S. border crossings and seaports to create a national data infrastructure, what they call a spatial data infrastructure. And that means that it goes down to the house level, according to Arkin, and it can be used for surveillance or military targeting.
Maya, they're talking about a mapping on a national scale of the spatial data infrastructure created down to the house level, which will have the following consequences. In regard to the prospect of martial law, and he states, he uses the formula martial law, Arkin states the following, outside the view of the public, the government is daily expanding military operations into all areas of local government and law enforcement that have historically been off limits. Those charged with assembling intelligence are combining databases with innocuous lists of contributors to charities, to causes, with membership lists for organizations folded in, names and personal data of anti-globalization protesters run through the data mine. The mission of Northern Command and Pentagon agencies is to identify groups and individuals who potentially pose threats to Defense Department and civilian installations. This is the erosion of democratic entitlement in the United States. The military is assuming responsibility for state, local, and federal authority throughout the United States, Arkin describes and states, all those which were once considered civil and local responsibilities are now being assigned through Northern Command to the military.
And so the Total Information Awareness Program that had been headed by retired Admiral John Poindexter under DARPA the defense research arm, and that Congress had squelched. The Total Information Awareness Program is back. It's back under the command of NORTHCOM with CIFA. As Arkin says, and he says it unequivocally, quote, domestic surveillance is back.
Indeed, the New York Daily News spells it out on November 23rd. The real-life matrix will be monitoring you. The matrix has arrived is the headline. The most massive database surveillance program in history. The multi-state anti-terrorism information exchange involving extensive information on the lives of all New Yorkers is in place. More information than they'd ever expect. Past addresses, phone numbers, marriage, divorce records, arrest records, real estate information, photographs of neighbors, business associates, car make, model, and color, hunting and fishing licenses, and more. The database created by Cisint, a Florida high-tech company, provides law enforcement officials with a centralized database combing through the data for the patterns of individual lives throughout New York. Matrix will locate all brown-haired males with a pilot's license living in Queens. There is no way the state is going to proceed with this program if it doesn't have the capacity to reach everyone. Matrix will help the authorities find anyone. It is going to be a device that applies across the board to anyone and all within New York City. It is the first launching pad for its expansion through the United States. 14 states are preparing to implement Matrix. Florida is already doing it across the entire state. And this is the little beginning of what the Daily News calls Matrix. We'll be monitoring you.
You are listening to Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Testing the Waters, Military Rule in America. This is WBAI 99.5 FM in New York and on the internet, www.wbai.org. Again, our program today, Testing the Waters, Military Rule in the United States. Now, this is made very clear, issues like the Matrix, by remarks that were prepared by Robert Mueller III, who's the director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And he presented them at the West Virginia Homeland Security Conference in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, November 10th, 2003. As you can see, these are all very recent references that we're giving you today. And Mueller's comments make clear that the FBI is fully integrated with the CIA. And this is what he says. From my daily morning briefings with CIA officers and Director George Tenet to the widespread assignment of executives, agents, and analysts between the two agencies since 9/11, the FBI and the CIA have become integrated at virtually every level of our operations. But what's also clear is there's not only the integration of the FBI and the CIA. As we mentioned before with NORTHCOM, there is the integration of the FBI, the CIA, and the military through NORTHCOM, particularly through CIFA. Ralph?
I want to begin by thanking everyone here for serving on the front lines of Homeland Security. Dealing with terrorist threats is not the job you signed on for, but you have met the challenge. We are out there every day. We are tracking the threats. We are ensuring the safety. And I know that all the agencies that are doing this are now integrating their efforts. We have a number of federal facilities that have been coordinated for the potential emergency response. We are working closely with the local chemistry industry, with the Jefferson County Postal Facilities, where biological weapons are a potential. Thankfully, West Virginia is ahead of the curve. You have stood up to emergency plans. We have outstanding partnerships of federal, state, and local agencies. Our agencies will be integrated in these efforts. The FBI is now in charge with state and local enforcement of the number one priority of shifting to law enforcement wherever it is required. We have a number of projects, the West Virginia Joint Terrorism Task Force. The truth is the FBI is working in close partnership with West Virginia officials, and this is the model. We work hand in hand to prepare for emergencies, and these relationships have grown stronger after 9/11. JTTF has members from state and local police, fire departments, other local agencies, now coordinated with the military itself, Mueller continues. It is but one of 50 JTTFs that we have added since 9/11, bringing our total nationwide network up to 84. The JTTFs play a crucial role in relaying information to headquarters of the FBI and disseminating it throughout the country.
Now, two programs that he mentions here are particularly ominous. One is the Strategic Medical Intelligence Program. This is a partnership between the FBI and area doctors to so-called, he says, combat terrorism by sharing information that could prevent or contain a biological attack. He states, the effort includes doctors with terrorism expertise from UPMC, the West Penn Allegheny Hospital System, West Virginia University, and Marshall University, among others. And these doctors, like members of the JTTFs and the InfraGuard chapters, now this, listen carefully, have been given clearance to receive sensitive information from the FBI, and in turn, they will coordinate with us in responding to unusual incidents. In other words, they will reveal the illnesses of their patients. Another division is the Criminal Justice Information Services Division, CJIS. And CJIS is an enormous database. He says it is the envy of law enforcement agencies around the world, particularly for its fingerprint database. The database is now helping us track down terrorists as well as criminals. For example, CJIS has a flyaway team that travel, the teams that travel around the world to load fingerprints into the system, traveling around the world to gather fingerprints to have a massive database. And he also notes, and note this too, that there's not only the coordination of the CIA, the FBI, and the military through NORTHCOM, he notes that the FBI, like many institutions, has gone global. In 1940, we established our first international office. Today, we have 46 offices around the world in locations from Riyadh to Rome and Tokyo to Tel Aviv. The FBI is everywhere. The CIA is everywhere. And it's all now being coordinated in the United States through the military, through NORTHCOM. What this means in New York and what it means elsewhere is clearly demonstrated by the Sunday New York Times November 23rd article, FBI Scrutinizes Anti-War Rallies, written by Eric Lichtbaugh. Now, this was a front page article and has created a firestorm among those of us in the protest movement who strive for better lives, and also in the FBI. For the first time, the Federal Bureau of Investigation has put on its website, www.fbi.gov, the entire memo. These are secret memos. They are not supposed to be leaked or revealed. And here it is, and you can read it all at www.fbi.gov. And I suggest that you do read it because it is extremely revealing of all that the FBI does and how it considers that the basic demonstration and basic labor labor activities are terrorist activities to be monitored. Ralph?
The FBI memo is explicit in stating that it was identifying extremist elements throughout the country, that the peaceful demonstrations are infiltrated by anarchists who use violent methods, that agents will attend all political rallies and other events, that it will engage in domestic intelligence gathering for the purpose of detecting and preventing terrorist activities, that it is in maintaining files on all the individuals who participate in these events, that protesters who use the internet and raise funds and coordinate their activities prior to demonstrations are considered to be targets for disruption, that activists make use of training camps to rehearse tactics, that they wear sunglasses so that they can withstand the effects of pepper spray and tear gas, that these are in fact the actions of people preparing for disruption in the United States. They defend themselves against law enforcement officials in the course of demonstrations, wearing scarves and scuba masks and sunglasses to minimize the effects, as I say, and I'm quoting. They use body protection equipment such as layered clothing and life jackets to protect themselves during marches. And after demonstrations, the activists are reluctant to cooperate with law enforcement officials. They don't carry identification papers, and they refuse to divulge information about other protesters. All of these, in the memo of the FBI, are grounds for seizing control of these individuals and removing them from civilian life.
Ralph, they state specifically, during the course of a demonstration, activists often communicate with one another using cell phones or radios to coordinate activities or to update colleagues about ongoing events. Other types of media equipment, video cameras, photographic equipment, audio tape recorders, microphones, and computer and radio equipment may be used for documenting potential cases of police brutality and for distribution of information over the Internet. Now, what does this all mean for the FBI? It is stated specifically in this October 15th, this memo that was distributed October 15th to 15,000 law enforcement agencies across the country, states, even the more peaceful techniques can create a climate of disorder, block access to a site, draw large numbers of police officers to a specific location in order to weaken security at other locations, obstruct traffic, and possibly intimidate people from attending the events being protested. So he says, they say at the end, law enforcement agencies should be alert to these possible indicators of protest activity and report any potentially illegal acts to the nearest FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force.
All this is in a very clear and specific context. The Wall Street Journal on the 28th of November published an article by Barry R. McCaffrey entitled Rumsfeld in Denial. General McCaffrey criticizes Rumsfeld for minimizing the task before the United States in Iraq. Indeed, he calls for a clear understanding that what will be required in the United States is a front-loaded military power with a force of a size of at least 250,000 in Iraq, a force capable of carrying out simultaneous occupation wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and the neighboring countries while remaining prepared to confront North Korea. He states thousands of reservists have been called up, but he states that will have to be increased by multiples. We will have to add 6 more National Guard brigades, 80,000 personnel of the Army to active duty force, that at least 200,000 will be required in order to accomplish these tasks. And he goes on to say in this detailed article criticizing Rumsfeld for not preparing for a massive increase in the call-up of National Reserves, of National Guards, and of the obvious preparation for the draft itself. He says the Joint Chiefs of Staff have to face up candidly to this issue in the coming months, notwithstanding the political considerations involved. And he states, the question is, do we have the political will to carry out the required political, economic, and security operations in the next 36 months. This is the moment for resolute leadership. This article by McCaffrey, featured in the Wall Street Journal, is the precise complement to the Frank's call for the suspension of the Constitution. It is in the context of the military rule anticipated and the orchestrated campaign about the massive terrorist attacks in the next year and the cancellation of the 2004 elections. There is a resistance in Iraq. There are over 10,000 casualties acknowledged already on the part of American forces. That resistance is expanding. The resistance is also increasing in Afghanistan. Imperialism is in crisis. The movement is a movement that now embraces the military families themselves. The disaffection is deepening, and the crisis is precipitating a suspension of all normal democratic forms of rule, representative forms of rule in the United States.
Well, McCaffrey should know what he's speaking about, because it is General Barry R. McCaffrey, who now is teaching at the United States Military Academy and also is the National Security and Terrorism Analyst for NBC News, and as we see, writing, publishing there in the Wall Street Journal. McCaffrey is not only on the board of trustees and directors of major military-industrial complex companies such as MITRE Tech Systems and Raytheon Aerospace. He is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations and the Atlantic Council of the United States. He was a member of the Committee for the Liberation of Iraq. And most importantly, in terms of the integration of the military and the police in the United States, it was General McCaffrey who had been appointed by President William Clinton to head the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy on January 7, 2001, and he served there. He stepped down in 2001 with the election of President Bush, but he served from February 1996, and he was on the President's Cabinet and the National Security Council in relation to the drug-related issue. It was General McCaffrey, who he had to retire in order to take that position, who was responsible for the intense militarization of the so-called war on drugs.
Jeremiah, General McCaffrey was the commander-in-chief of U.S. Armed Forces Southern Command, coordinating what was euphemistically called national security operations in Latin America. He did this for 13 years, and in fact, the operations involved the death squads across Latin America, which were part of his desk. The School of the Americas, the assassination squads, the Dobison elimination of dissidents throughout El Salvador, the extermination of peasants across Guatemala, the murder apparatus of the repressive state, all under the command of General McCaffrey, Commander-in-Chief of the U.S. Armed Forces Southern Command, coordinator of the national security operations in Latin America, death squads on steroids, the mouthpiece now for the political will to do what is necessary in the United States to prepare for the massive expansion of the military in Iraq, Afghanistan, for North Korean confrontation and beyond.
And during the Bush senior administration, General Barry McCaffrey was the assistant to Colin Powell, to General Colin Powell, when Colin Powell was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And he was also the advisor to the Secretary of State and to the U.S. Ambassador to the United States. So we have here a man who believes firmly in the integration of the military and the law enforcement, the police apparatus in the United States. And here he is saying that you need a much more increased military intervention in Iraq.
And the political will in the United States to impose it.
And what does it mean in terms of protest of what is taking place? We had William Arkin noting that we have domestic surveillance here. We have in the Boston Globe an editorial in response to the release of the FBI memo, the disclosure, rather, of the FBI memo. And recently, with the protests in Miami, Florida, a real example of the militarization of the police, when $8.5 million from the recent allocations for Afghanistan and Iraq, the $85 billion allocation, part of that money went directly to support the police enforcement against the protesters of the anti-FTAA, the Free Trade of the America, rallies and protests in March taking place in Miami recently in November. And there was a rally November 20th held by the AFL-CIO, at which AFL-CIO President Sweeney and Secretary Treasurer Trumka, formerly of the United Mine Workers, appeared. But also, and most importantly, 2,000 steelworkers participated in this rally, along with their retirees, members of other AFL-CIO unions, participants from Citizens Trade Campaign, Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, United Students Against Sweatshops, and activists from all over the country. And what they were met with, according to the president of the United Steelworkers of America, Leo Girard, was that they were met with violence from the Miami police, quote, who systematically repressed our constitutional right to free assembly with massive force, riot gear, and armaments, including combat vehicles. Girard is clear, forceful in his letter to the Senate leaders and the House leaders, the congressional leaders. He said, a massive police state was created. There can be no doubt that using massive armed force to deny us the right to publicly and peacefully confront the FTAA negotiators put the full powers of the state in the service of the multinational corporations and financiers who singularly benefit from the expansion of so-called free trade. Now, what the United Steelworkers have done is called not only for an investigation, but they have called for the firing of the police chief, John Timoney, the Miami police chief, and that all charges against the demonstrators be dropped. Timoney, by the way, was the police chief in Philadelphia during the protests and the crackdown that involved, again, the use of the military in Philadelphia at the time of the last Republican National Convention. Ralph?
This intervention by Leo Girard of the United Steelworkers is a model of what is required if there is to be any resistance to the suspension of any of constitutional norms and the imposition of military rule in the United States. The clarion call that is coming not only from Tommy Franks, but which is being orchestrated in the Washington Post and the Los Angeles Times and USA Today and in established papers throughout the world. And indeed, the working class at the point of production has the capacity to wage this fight back is, in fact, the only effective organized vehicle for a resistance of serious character to the preparations of our rulers to suspend all democratic norms. It is only through smashing the organized working class that this proto-fascist form of rule can be consolidated. That is the sociology of the capitalist resort to fascist rule. But in that connection and in that context, there's an aspect of the remarks of Leo Girard that we must examine. It, he says, it is doubly condemnable that $9 million of federal funds designated for the reconstruction of Iraq were used towards this despicable purpose. How can we hope to build democracy in Iraq while using massive force to dismantle it here at home? And indeed, the important speech by McCaffrey concedes the ideological ground to the rulers by accepting the false premise of some democratic intent.
You don't mean McCaffrey, you mean Girard.
Excuse me, of course I mean Girard. Accepting the false premise of some democratic intent towards occupied Iraq. And in that context, the leader of the steelworkers makes reference to the treatment of demonstrators as if they were the terrorists against whom these sorts of powers should be directed. Let us be very clear about this. Terrorism is the lie, the pretext, the rationale for this entire operation. Indeed, the key feature of it was outlined in 1996 in the Progressive Review by Sam Smith in his own title, Mission Creep, The Militarizing of America. And that article in 1996 refers to General Barry McCaffrey as the drug czar, symbolizing the nation's dramatic retreat from the principle of separation of military and civilian power. And one of the aspects of that important critique is the following. He states, the United States is without any military opponent in the world today. The power of the American military is 1,600 times the combined capacity of 15 countries, including Iraq and Iran and Libya and all of the countries in the Middle East. There is no military opposition to American power. And consequently, Major General Barry McCaffrey is amongst those who have been pointing to the absence of a rationale for increased military allocation in the United States. They will need a pretext, writes Sam Smith in 1996. The militarizing of America will require a contrivance, a series of contrived disasters to persuade a reluctant public that there's any rationale for maintaining these vast military budgets. The militarization of America required the false category of terror, the demon abroad, as the rationale not only for expanded military activity overseas and occupations and imperial reach, but repression at home. We are going to address in the second part of this series the important document by Colonel Charles Dunlap called The Coming Military Takeover in America.
The Origins of the American Military Coup of 2012. You've been listening to Taking Aim with
Rob Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Testing the Waters, Military Rule in America. Stay tuned next week for part two. You can listen to this program again and order copies in audio tape or CD format. Listen at www.takingaim.info and contact us at 212-209-2953 or 707-552-9995 or write to us at takingaim@wbai.org. I want to take this moment to thank all of you who contributed to the WBAI Minithon for the underlying politics of 9/11 or who killed Kennedy and why. You can still contribute again on the internet at www.wbai.org, and please stay tuned this weekend for the Radiothon. We'll be with you next week.